Jeff Timmer is former executive director of the Michigan Republican Party. Mark Brewer is former chair of the Michigan Democrats. And this is a republic, if you can keep it, with Jeff Timmer and Mark Brewer.
Welcome back to A Republic If You Can Keep It. I'm Mark Brewer. Later in the podcast, Jeff Timmer and I will be joined by our special guest, Republican political advisor, writer, and political commentator, Amanda Carpenter.
We begin with some of the politics of the last week. Mark, the first tranche of census data has been released, and it shows a significant population shift in Michigan. We haven't gained a lot of residents, but their movement within the state has some significant political impact. What's your first take on the numbers?
Well, I think basically the numbers were as predicted in terms of the overall numbers. Michigan had very slow growth. It was expected we'd get over 10 million people, and we did just barely. But as you just pointed out, Jeff, there has been significant shifts within the state. Tremendous loss of population in the Upper Peninsula and the Eastern Lower Peninsula. Growth on the western side of the Northern Lower Peninsula, and then significant growth in Kent County, in suburban southeastern Michigan, but a big loss, and to me a little bit of a surprising, in terms of its size, loss in the city of Detroit.
Yeah, when you look at the estimated data by county that had been out there, you know, for the last year since the 2019 estimates came out from the Census Bureau, those were pretty close to spot on in terms of the populations and the proportions between each county. But there were some significant changes within counties at the city and township level when it came to the estimated data. And what was striking to me was, by and large, outside of the city of Detroit, which was predicted to lose a lot of people, Flint, which was expected to lose a lot of people, but the suburban areas, the counties that Joe Biden won, gained population in comparison to the estimated populations that people have been kind of doing back of the placemat redistricting plans with for the last, you know, few months. And the rural areas lost population. So suburban areas gained population, suburban areas are becoming more competitive, more democratic. Biden wins suburbs across Michigan, they gain population. Trump wins in the rural areas, they lost population. That underscores the, just the math problem that the Republicans have right now as they become older and whiter. And the census shows that, the next decade is likely to bring some serious math trouble winning elections to Republicans, which is why they are so eager to put their thumb on the scale when it comes to drawing districts. I can attest to that from personal experience. And it shows why they're so eager to change access laws to voting, because unless they can manipulate the system through artificial means, they're going to have a hard time winning elections. Unless, hey, here's a novel idea: appeal to a broader swath of people than just old white people, and maybe try that. But that seems to be option three that are trying options one and two first.
Yeah, I was pleased to see though an increase in diversity in Michigan. The African-American population remained relatively steady, but a significant increase, at least percentage-wise, of Hispanic, Latino population, and also Asian and Middle Eastern populations. I mean, we're not California or Texas or other states like that yet, but there is an increasing amount of diversity, and you see that in the makeup. The city of Hamtramck, for example, a majority Bengali city council. In Dearborn now, an Arab American is on the ballot as one of two finalists in the general election for mayor in the fall. You see it in elections at the township and city council levels as well. And it's just really good to see that diversity and, I hope, increasing acceptance of minorities in Michigan. Jeff, what do you think about how this is going to impact the congressional districts? I mean, we lost a seat. We knew that was coming. But you've talked about how people have shifted around, and there's been lots of speculation. Oh, the seat should come out of Detroit. Oh, the seat should come out of Northern Michigan. What's your initial take on what's going to happen with the congressional districts?
If I'm an incumbent, this is like playing musical chairs. When the music stops, there's going to be one less chair than there are people circling around them. If I'm an incumbent and I live somewhat proximate to another incumbent, you know, I'm looking over my shoulder and watching everything that they do. And, you know, certainly in Southeast Michigan, you have a bunch of geographically proximate incumbents. You know, in Oakland County, there's three Democrats who represent and live, represent portions of Oakland County. Especially Haley Stevens and Andy Levin could probably hit golf balls to and from each other's house. But when you look at how the maps are likely to be divided, you know, there's no requirement in the Constitution, either the state Constitution or U.S. Constitution, that a Congress member live in their district, and the there should be opportunities for incumbents who want to either relocate or run in a wide, you know, a district that represents a wide swath of their current territory. So if I'm, you know, somebody like Levin or Stevens, I'm a bit concerned, you know, watching each, you know, do we end up in the same district? If I'm Tim Walberg, I'm nervous because, you know, there's a whole lot of Democratic territory right near, you know, his district. So it's still early in the game, but, you know, I think that given the population shifts, the hide is likely to come up. It's going to be a Republican hide more likely when the maps are drawn than it is a Democratic district that disappears. But that may not be the case for every single incumbent.
Right. I mean, you know, we've seen this in the last several decades as we've lost a seat or two ever since 1980. There's been pairing of incumbents, sometimes Democrat with Democrat, sometimes Democrat with Republican. That has occurred as well. You point out Southeast Michigan, but, you know, Dale Kelly and John Molinar don't live that far apart. One in Flint, one in Midland, on the western side of the state.
Yeah, Bill Huizenga
and Meyer.
Or Fred Upton. Yep. And, you know, when I was drawn the districts the last two cycles, I always made sure to put Democrat incumbents together. John Dingell and Lynn Rivers, Gary Peters and Sandy Levin. Gary chose to move and run against another Democratic incumbent who he beat in the primaries. But this time, you know, all bets are off as the new commission doesn't even consider incumbency when drawing their maps. So early in the game, but it's interesting to see these numbers come out.
Yeah, and we'll see how it all plays out. Now the commission is scheduled to start drawing maps this week, beginning with the state Senate, followed by the House and the Congress. So we're really starting to get moving here when it comes to actually drawing maps. So, Jeff, other big news this week, we saw the return of John Engler to Michigan in the capacity as a treasurer for a PAC that looks like it's going to back Craig for governor. What do you think?
Well, I think it's notable that Engler is engaging at a personal level in a campaign in a fairly high profile way, or what could be a high profile way. But what I think it underscores is some behind the scenes maneuverings that were going on. It was reported this summer that Engler was doing his damnedest to convince Jim Craig not to include some of his consulting team that he currently has around him. This goes way back, you know, notably Chuck Yob and John Yob. This goes way back to, you'll remember the nomination battle at the convention where John Smetanka beats Scott Romney, Mitt's brother, Engler's handpicked choice for attorney general, who may have been able to defeat Jennifer Granholm that fall when she was running for attorney general. And, you know, the could have been a different trajectory in Michigan politics had that occurred. Right. So there's been a personal grudge since then between, you know, Engler and certainly Chuck Yob. And so, you know, this could have something to do with that, where Engler is going to be directing and controlling some of the big money into a super PAC so that Chuck Yob doesn't.
Well, it must have taken something for John Engler to basically come out of retirement. I mean, he doesn't even live in Michigan anymore and get involved at this level, this early, Jeff, in a gubernatorial campaign. I expect he's going to raise big, big money and still can raise big money for this PAC that he's now the treasurer of.
We'll see now if Chuck Yob counters with a John Smetanka-led super PAC for Jim Craig.
Mark and Jeff will be right back with Republican consultant, author, and columnist Amanda Carpenter after these messages.
Epic MRA is a Lansing-based market research and public opinion polling firm with nearly four decades of experience accurately measuring public opinion about politics, ballot proposals, and other federal, state, and local issues. Epic MRA is one of the most quoted polling firms in the country. Clients include media outlets, school districts, colleges and universities, state agencies, local governments, labor unions, interest groups, and businesses throughout Michigan. Whether it's measuring voter opinion about who's up or down in elections, or if ballot proposals or legislation can earn voter approval, Epic MRA is known as the go-to Michigan pollster. Visit www.epicmra.com to learn more.
Show your support for preserving our republic at The A Republic If You Can Keep It merch store. We've got t-shirts and coffee mugs made to order for lovers of our representative democracy. Just go to our website, arepublicpodcast.com, and click on the merch store button. You aren't fully dressed until you have Ben Franklin on your chest. It's the perfect gift for that democracy lover in your life.
Joining us on A Republic If You Can Keep It is Amanda Carpenter. Amanda is an author, political advisor, and speechwriter. She's a former senior staffer to Senators Jim DeMint and Ted Cruz. She was a columnist for the Washington Times and regularly appears now as a contributor on CNN and as an author in thebulwark.com.
She grew up in Montrose, Michigan. She worked as a congressional correspondent for Human Events from 2005 to 2007. Before going to townhall.com to become its national political reporter. In July 2015, Carpenter returned to her journalism career. She is known for critiquing President Trump, in particular his treatment of women. Carpenter has said that she agrees with some of the policy decisions of Trump, but that the scandals surrounding his presidency make it very difficult to defend him. In her 2018 book, Gaslighting America, Why We Love It When Trump Lies to Us, she critiques Trump's propensity for lying.
Welcome, Amanda Carpenter.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Well, we certainly have been seeing a lot of inexplicable behavior from Republicans, most notably in the national news. You've got, Ron DeSantis promoting Regeneron and other kinds of really expensive treatments for COVID, but discounting and discouraging free vaccinations or wearing masks to mitigate the transfer of COVID. You've got Texans and Greg Abbott and others threatening to withhold funding from school districts and cities that impose mask mandates. Here in Michigan, we've got legislation being introduced by Republicans who control the state legislature, threatening to withhold funding from school districts who impose mask mandates. It seems kind of crazy if Republicans would only put half as much effort into stopping the spread of COVID as they are trying to stop people who are trying to stop the spread of COVID, if that makes sense. Maybe we'd be better off and we wouldn't have to go through all these antics.
Yeah. And it's really, they're still in the hole that was dug by Donald Trump, over a year and a half ago, 18 months ago, when he started off essentially saying that COVID isn't real. Oh, maybe it is real, but it's not a big deal. And then it kind of transitioned to, this is just a huge excuse for the Democrats to enforce lockdowns. And as soon as the election is over, this will disappear. That was a line, sort of infamously said by my former boss, Ted Cruz, which I really couldn't believe at the time. But they're all kind of in this corner. And really, it's not all the Republicans. I mean, what is sort of strange to me, not all the Republican governors are doing this. You have DeSantis, Abbott, Noem. You've got the contingent in the House there in Michigan, But not all Republican governors are going down this road. It's really only the Trump base and people angling for the endorsement from the Trump base for 2024, which I just find incredible. I mean, DeWine isn't going down this road, Jim Justice, Spencer Cox. I mean, you can go down the line of other Republicans, but the people who have all the enthusiasm, all the attention, they're in this Trump corner and just can't get out of it.
Oh, you're right, Amanda. There are a couple exceptions. I see that Governor Hutchinson in Arkansas recently expressed regret that he signed a ban on masks. And Governor Ivey in Alabama recently has started encouraging people to take vaccinations. But it's so ironic that what we're seeing in terms of federal aid to Florida and Texas is not assistance in terms of vaccinations, but, send us mortuary trailers, if I could be so morbid, when it comes to what's going on in
ventilators.
Texas. Yeah, ventilators.
And nurses from other states, come bail us out of this problem we created. It is truly stunning.
And not just created, but are still encouraging the kind of reckless behavior that's going to continue to spread this like wildfire, especially as people go back inside, back into the classrooms, as weather starts to change, back inside more, we're going to see spikes. They're running out of ICU beds in Texas and Florida. We might not have seen the worst spike yet.
No. Ron DeSantis made a huge gamble. I mean, a bigger gamble than even Kristi Noem, because let's admit it, she's from a rural state. Ron DeSantis has an aging population, an economy that depends on tourism, healthcare, education. I mean, those are the big employers. And I think he's a gambler. I think it was easy for him to say, hey, we have the vaccine coming on the way. We're going to get out of this soon. I can keep the state open. I can keep this sort of anti-lockdown posture, don't Fauci my Florida, because the vaccine will bail me out. Except for it didn't. Except for more people listened to the disinformation that I think he counted on, because there was a time where he was sort of encouraging the vaccines, doing the responsible thing. But then it came to, well, it's your choice. The sort of the Fox News line. Well, I'm not going to tell you what to do. You listen to your doctor and it's okay if you have questions. And now that's biting him. He gambled poorly. And it's really tragic because, I mean, I've got young kids. We're going into this was our second summer of COVID, of not having camps, not being able to go to parties freely. And kids are going to go into another school year like this. We're talking about possibly losing 2 years of normal school. That is insane.
Yeah. Amanda, is this ever going to hurt DeSantis or these other Republican governors politically?
I mean, maybe if the Democrats could get their act together in Florida, sorry. I mean, he barely beat Gillum. And look how that guy turned out. God, hope he gets well and all that, but he barely beat Gillum. And so it seems like he doesn't totally have Florida in the bag. But there's not a great farm team down there. I don't think Nikki Fried is going to be able to do it. And I don't know why people haven't made the investment in Florida that they're putting into Texas, when Florida seems much more winnable for the Democrats.
I see Charlie Crist wants to make a comeback there as a Democrat. Any prognostications on that? I know that's not the young farm team that you just talked about.
No, I mean, the problem is he's going to pull potentially some Republican voters that a Democrat would need to win to put him over the edge for DeSantis. I mean, that's the problem here. I think you need a strong candidate. And although DeSantis has made some bad decisions and has a lot of vulnerabilities, he's got all the 2024 glow and spotlight on him, because the base loves him, because they've looked at the field already, right? Like, they've gone through CPAC, they've done their vetting. The Republican farm team for 2024 isn't great, but for a person that can keep the Trump base together and sort of put a slightly more competent together sheen on it, they've already decided DeSantis is the one. If you watch Fox News, Sean Hannity, Tucker, not so much Tucker, but Laura Ingraham, they've all decided DeSantis is the one they're throwing their lot behind. And it's because they don't have anybody else. And so it's funny when you see people, I work at the Bulwark and we criticize DeSantis. It is vicious, the backlash from, the Trump base. And I truly believe it is because he's the only one that would be the heir to Trump. And if you knock him out, they don't have anybody.
I'm still of the opinion that the nominee is going to be Trump. And so what I think is funny is, like, you know, you had that CPAC gathering in Dallas within the last month, and they do their straw poll, and Trump gets 70% and DeSantis gets 20, and nobody else exceeds 1%. You've got, you know, you mentioned Ted Cruz, and, you know, Ted, who was the runner up and came within a whisker of being the nominee in 2016, has sold every ounce of integrity and character and claimed real conservatism that he once possessed in order to, I guess, just suck up to Trump and the Trump base. And he doesn't get 1% from the hardcore folks who show up there. It really shows that they're, you know, my friend Rick Wilson has called it, you know, everything Trump touches dies, you know, the book that he wrote. Yep. It's a great, you know, Ted Cruz is a great example of that. Josh Hawley, Marco Rubio, all these guys who have just bent over backwards to try to be as Trumpy as they can, don't have anything to show for it. DeSantis is interesting. I wonder how long he's going to continue to show strength like that without Trump firing some missives at him.
Well, here's my theory on DeSantis. He kind of has a standing here because he's never been made to be responsible for Trump's actions in a way that Ted Cruz or Nikki Haley or the rest of them have, because they've been within his orbit. Yeah, DeSantis kind of gets a pass because he's in Florida and he, you know, goes to Mar-a-Lago and sucks up, and he's just waiting for Trump to sort of give him the nomination on a silver platter. And I'm with you. I think Trump is going to hold on to it for as long as he can and probably just say, well, wouldn't DeSantis be a great VP? And then maybe pull out at the very end and let DeSantis get crushed. And that will be his defining moment. But that's just how I see that scenario possibly playing out. But all these other people, I mean, Mike Pompeo, you know, when he went into the Trump administration early, I thought, okay, there's somebody who might be dependable, might be able to do this thing and escape with maybe some more experience, competence, credibility. That's not turning out to be the case, certainly with what's going on in Afghanistan and the things that he said about the Taliban and working with them. But DeSantis has never had to answer for Trump's worst moments. I still have yet to see an interview where DeSantis has been asked about January 6th. I mean, I don't know what he said on that, except for, oh, you know, there were some irregularities and people were right to ask questions. I don't know if he's nimble enough to do that dance. We'll see.
Amanda, you wrote a great book back in 2018 about why we love it, as Americans, why we love it when Trump lies to us. And I'd love to hear your insights about why it is we seem to buy into, or at least not reject, Trump's lying. I mean, what's going on with the American public?
Well, earlier on, you know, watching this rise, it was sort of twofold, broke down between Republicans and Democrats. I think a lot of Republicans who had faced losing the last two presidential elections, felt burned, wanted a bully that would go punch people in the face, but in a way that John McCain, Mitt Romney would not, were sort of at first offended with Trump's brazenness, but then kind of impressed with how much he was able to get away with it, and kind of saying, wow, this guy never backs down. This is kind of fun. You know, trolling was something to try out. And then it became like a way of life. Right? A way of governing. You know, I talk about the gaslighting, which is just the manipulation of reality for one's purposes and ends. But people were impressed with how brazen he could be and how it didn't seem to knock him down. And that was sort of the lesson everyone took with it. And at the same token, the Democrats, you know, that I watched were cheering him on too, even those in the media, because they thought, oh, surely this lie will be the next thing to crush him. This lie will be the one. You know, I work for Ted Cruz and I watch all these Democratic haughty people say, yeah, go ahead and make Trump the nominee. He's going to get crushed. He's going to get crushed. Even after Access Hollywood, I was on set with Van Jones that weekend when everything was happening. And I was making the argument that a lot of people were that, like, let's get rid of this guy. Let's just take Pence to the end. I mean, he's a good man of character. We should not, this guy, Donald Trump has showed us what kind of person he is. And surely now, you know, Kelly, other people were saying, yeah, he should get out. And Van Jones, who's a smart guy, looked at me and said, no, you cannot abort your candidate now, because they were so excited to be him. And where did that go? So, I mean, you have, they all loved it when he lied because they thought that they could beat it. And that is just not the case. There was an appetite for it that they completely underestimated.
And then now, after Trump gets elected, and even now after his defeat, it seems like that has become the model for a lot of Republican candidates. And frankly, I even see some Democrats who seem to be kind of edging that direction.
Yeah, this is the big election lie, right? Like, I thought the worst gaslighting of America, to put it that way, would be with Trump did with COVID. And that's still worst on paper, no doubt, because it resulted, what, 630 something that we don't even count anymore. 600 how many thousand deaths? We don't even know anymore. But it also resulted in an assault on our democracy, the first disruption in the peaceful transition of power. And that lie lives on. I mean, in the states going out these fraudits, I don't know if Michigan's going to get one. There's probably a couple of people who are trying. Wisconsin might get one. Pennsylvania's trying. I mean, that lie lives on. And when people don't trust our elections anymore, and we've had political violence, the political violence has happened. And it was before January 6th. At these rallies, people are, you know, targeting election workers, the threats on Facebook. It doesn't matter who you are in public life. You're going to be threatened online at some point in time. And sometimes those threats online translate to real life. And so, you know, I don't want to be like, oh, what's going to happen? It is happening. The bad things are happening. And it's all a result of people acting on those lies.
Yeah, I know we are seeing that here in Michigan. Ongoing demands for fraud. It's today in Michigan, a group started talking about a petition drive to amend our election law so that any voter after any election could ask for a so-called forensic audit. So you're just talking about endless chaos.
Yeah.
After every election, that'll be requested. There'll never be any uncertainty, and it'll just continue to erode the election system. It is difficult to see where this stops.
I just keep going back to that scene. What was it, last November, when we were all oddly watching that Board of Canvassers meeting to see if Aaron Vanderveld, is that how you say his name, was going to, what way he was going to vote? I mean, really, like, this is such a thin line that our democracy hangs on. That day, it came down to one Republican on one, you know, 5-member board of Canvassers. We all were watching it. Like, this should be just totally, you know, rote, shouldn't be questioned. But we came close, and I think we're going to come close again, which is why, you know, I'm working so hard in these different kind of projects, and I'm sure you guys are too.
No, you're right. It used to be that just election geeks like Jeff and I would attend those meetings or watch. Well,
I served on the board for years.
Yeah, Jeff was on that board.
And the untold story is the amount of maneuvering and pressure that was going on behind the scenes to make that one vote happen, or to try to get that one vote to abstain. And there's when you multiply stories like that across all the election jurisdictions that were kind of under the microscope after the election in Georgia and Arizona and some of the very close states, if any one of the Aaron Van Langevelds had folded, the whole thing could have collapsed. You know,
it's my understanding he's not there anymore, correct?
Oh, he's not. No, he's
they
not there
him.
Anymore.
Yeah.
Because the party didn't renominate him because he was a heretic. You know, he's stoned in the public square of the Republican Party.
Wherever you are, Aaron, we're thinking of you.
We're seeing ongoing problems with local clerks and election workers, like you talked about, Amanda. The Bay County clerk here in Michigan, which is an outstate county, contested competitive county, just quit. It's not clear why she quit, but why would you quit midterm? Yeah. Long time.
Why wouldn't you with this stuff going on? Who in their right mind would stay?
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, this brings up many of our listeners are from Michigan, and, you know, a lot aren't, but you may not know that Amanda is from Michigan, grew up here. And so probably very familiar with that I-75 corridor in Bay County.
Yeah, played a lot of softball that way. Yeah, I grew up in Genesee County, a little town called Montrose, went to Montrose Public Schools there all the way, K-12, ended up going to school down in Indiana, drove, you know, right down that highway about 3 hours. and that's where I've spent all my first 17 years were fully in Michigan.
That's interesting. I just got back for, I dropped my daughter off at that school in Bloomington yesterday. So,
oh, yeah?
Yeah, drove.
Yeah, I went to a little school in Angola, and then I went down to Ball State in Muncie.
Well, that area where you grew up, as you know, Amanda, it was, it's still pretty competitive. It tends to be trending toward Trump. There's no doubt about it. Outstate Genesee, particularly out county Genesee, out county Saginaw. But it, you know, could be a battleground again, depending on how our redistricting.
Yeah, I was so amazed in 2016, and I think Trump went back in 2020, how he singled out Birch Run to go do some of those early stops. And I just knew immediately that that's a good area for him. I worked at the outlet malls there all my first summer jobs. And I just thought that was a really interesting choice. It worked for him.
Now, he clearly knew what he was doing. I was walking door to door in the summer of 2016 to Democratic doors. And I would walk up to Democratic doors and I would see Trump signs. I would see Trump bumper stickers. And to me, that was a sign. I don't care what the poll said, that, you know, Trump can win this. Trump can win this. And he did carry Michigan.
Indeed.
Yeah, but we're seeing, you know, the kind of the amazing shift, kind of the shift in polarity, where areas that were very Democratic, reliably, you know, downriver, close in, older suburbs around Detroit are trending Republican, voting for Trump. Places, Oakland County, Kent County around Grand Rapids, where I grew up, I would have never imagined a Democrat winning Kent County in a race for governor or president, except in the most extreme wave elections. Yet, you know, Joe Biden, you know, most of his margin in Michigan came out of Oakland County and the rest came out of Kent County. We're seeing the shift there with college educated suburbs and exurbs voting for Democrats and blue collar old suburbs voting for Republicans. And so it's kind of upside down, cats and dogs living together.
Yeah, like, but it's a podcast. Yeah, but that's a nationwide trend. And it seems like the Biden coalition is those suburbs aligned with black voters. And that's where he's found the magic.
Yeah. And what was interesting, we were opening the show talking about the unexpected numbers in within the census. And this was true in Michigan, but also nationwide, how urban areas and areas that voted for Biden tended to come in with bigger numbers in the census than people had anticipated, where the rural areas, those places that voted for Trump, came in with less population than had been anticipated. And that will, I guess, it should encourage the Democrats a little bit, as they've been kind of, you know, down in the face looking at the prospect of the way redistricting was going to affect them in some of the states that had gained. But maybe that will take some of the sting out of it now that the numbers are in.
Yeah, and I think that partly explains the broader trend of the Republican Party to engage in, you know, all of these election integrity, I say that in quotes, shenanigans. It's because, you know, Donald Trump never conceded that he lost the election. The broad takeaway, if there was an autopsy, you know, the Twitter autopsy was that it was stolen. And so if you believe that it was stolen, you look at ways to restrict the votes, because high turnout elections do not result in wins for the Republican Party on a broad scale. And so that's something I've been watching very closely. I do not know what is going to go on with the Democrats on the national level to pass these voting reform bills in order to counter the hundreds of bills that are being passed by Republicans in state legislatures. I question their strategy of putting infrastructure first and spending so much time on that while not advancing that kind of voting rights bill. But I understand that'll get to a question of rules, as they say, which is code for filibuster reform, and whether Kyrsten Sinema and Manchin will be willing. I don't think they're going to abolish the filibuster, but at least weaken it to give those voting rights bills a better chance of passing. But now with what's happening in Afghanistan, I think that throws a whole curveball into the order of operations they were planning on there in terms of passing infrastructure and they get back and then moving on to voting rights.
Well, we in Michigan could sure use that federal bill. As you may have heard or seen, we've got dozens of voter suppression bills pending in the legislature, some of which are passing. Our Democratic governor will veto them, but now there's been threats of a petition drive to bypass the governor. It hasn't launched yet, but the Republican Party chair started talking about that last winter. Yeah. And so that fight here is ongoing. We may well end up in court. as well. And like I mentioned a moment ago, we've got counties where people are going and say, we want an audit. We want a forensic audit in this county. We've got two of these big lie proponents now running for statewide office as Republicans.
Matt, yeah, so how's that petition drive work? It's a petition drive to get a ballot initiative to do stuff to restrict voting. Is that a little
there's a wrinkle in Michigan's constitution that says if citizens present legislation through petition, the legislature can by simple majority vote adopt it. And if they don't adopt it, it goes on to before the voters. But the Republicans in the legislature with simple majority votes can adopt it and bypass the governor. But they have to do it this calendar year. And so there's still time, but it's a tall order. They have to get more than 400,000 signatures when you figure the overage. They have to be certified.
Audit the signatures. Yeah. I want to verify each and every one. Oh, yeah. I need transparency in this process, Jeff.
Right. No.
Well, we do challenge the signatures, but unfortunately, it's not a complete audit. Michigan law just lets you do the sampling.
You're not going to do the Arizona plan and go door to door to verify the signatures? They were proposing that at one point in time, the cyber ninjas were, until they realized that might backfire.
We'll convince Mike Lindell that there's something nefarious afoot here, and we'll get him in.
Yeah, get a pull out of it.
As I was saying, I think the Republicans may well nominate candidates for Attorney General and Secretary of State here who believe in the big lie, and then they're going to be in charge of the elections come 2024. And so many of us have concluded here, this is not over. We got through 2024, but these attacks and these threats are just going to continue.
By the way, what an impressive job Whitmer and Nessel and Jocelyn Benson have been doing under the incredible pressure. I mean, and just hostile. I mean, people bringing guns to their workplace is a show of intimidation. I could not be more impressed with the just coolness and the hard-headed, determined approach that those three women have taken. You know, I know Whitmer gets a lot of flack and nobody gets things perfect, but just what an incredible show of force from those women.
Yeah, it's been really bad. You probably heard there was a kidnapping plot against her.
Yeah.
And most people are being prosecuted now. We had people show up to state capitol with guns. It was really a precursor to what happened on January 6th.
Yeah, I think about that a lot.
And at the epicenter of all this.
What's been amazing about Whitmer is throughout this last year, now going on a year and a half of COVID, there's been some pretty loud squeaky wheels, you know, critics, but they are still a very distinct minority, and the numbers bear that out. Her favorability isn't where it was at its ultimate high. You know, she's not in the, you know, two-thirds support, but she has greater job approval today than Rick Snyder, who served for two terms, had at his highest point. She's at her lowest point, which is higher than his highest point. I would much rather be Gretchen Whitmer here is in mid-August, you know, before the election, given her numbers and how the opposition is shaping up. I would much rather be her than the Republicans in their field of dreams trying to figure out how they're going to beat her.
Just tell her to delay those spring breaks to Florida until everything is good again. Okay. Although I don't blame her for wanting a margarita.
Right.
Well, it'll be interesting to see how this all plays out now. Again, with redistricting in the mix, I think we're going to see a lot of new seats, change seats. I think a lot of these Republicans that are proponents of the big lie are going to run for the state legislature. They may try to take out some incumbent Republicans who've been brave enough to stand up against the big lie. I think there's a lot of turmoil to come for the Republican Party here.
Oh, yeah, there's definitely orthodoxy being enforced. I mean, we're seeing that up and down. We're seeing that within the party. We're seeing it within the party staff. They ran out Jason Rowe recently because he dared to say Donald Trump had lost the election. He was the executive director at the Republican Party. Forced out. We're seeing the state senator who put out the report that said there was no fraud in the election. You've got county parties 400 miles away from his district now, county Republican parties censuring him, calling for his resignation. They've lost their freaking minds. And that's what they're focused on. They are totally focused on August. And I think, you know, these Trump candidates will win August primaries and be woefully positioned to win in competitive districts and statewide in November. And fine by me, because these people need to lose because they are a threat and a danger to our democracy.
Yep. Oh, well.
Amanda, you may want to make a trip back home to Michigan to see the Republican State Convention next summer.
Oh.
In which will they will nominate.
I will not be welcome there. Guess what? There will be no, oh, welcome back home to Michigan, Amanda. Yeah. No.
Well, the convention will certainly be worth watching, even if you don't attend, in terms of who gets nominated for Secretary of State, Attorney General, Lieutenant Governor. It could be quite a tumultuous convention. Jeff's run a lot of those.
Well, it was crazy before it was crazy. I mean, now the ones who were crazy 10, 12 years ago are the sane ones, even though they haven't gotten any saner, but it's all relative.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're the mainstream in the Republican Party now, trying to stave off the real crazies.
Yeah, well, maybe OAN will air it and fundraise for their next audit, and I can watch it that way.
Yeah, I'm sure that we're going to see a lot of that.
Well, Amanda Carpenter, thank you for taking the time to join us today. It's been a great conversation. And I'll take a quick pause here. Is there anything that you've got going on that you want to mention? Any projects, anything, any upcoming book or anything that you want us to?
No, I'm just treading water for now. My kids go back to school. Maybe. Maybe next week. Thank you, though.
I wanted to make sure before we cut you loose, if there was anything you wanted to mention that we hadn't bothered to. So
no, I appreciate that though. Okay. Well, thanks for having me, guys. This is fun.
Thanks, Amanda.
Okay. Bye.
Bye-bye. And with that, we're done for another week. Our great thanks to Amanda Carpenter for joining us.
As always, we welcome your comments or questions. Email us at comments@arepublicpodcast.com, or you can add your comments on our Facebook page or via our website.
And don't forget to check out our new merch center. Just go to arepublicpodcast.com and click on the merch store button. If the Republic is still standing, we'll be back in a week. I'm Mark Brewer.
And I'm Jeff Timmer. Thanks for listening.
You can subscribe to A Republic If You Can Keep It on your favorite podcast app. A Republic If You Can Keep It is a production of Michigan Citizens for a Better Tomorrow.